This is Sam with a quick note before starting this week's show. This week we were recording, well, I was recording from my hotel room on the road. And, well, let's just say the audio quality is not up to our normal standards. I was recording through the microphone on my laptop instead of a standalone microphone. And I didn't wear my headphones. So initially there was a lot of echo on Yvonne. I did manage to figure out how to remove most of that echo, if not all of it, but it's still not quite as good as before, as normal. But hey, believe me, I did the whole show up first with the echo, and it was much worse, much, much worse. And so, hey, here you go. Here comes the show. Enjoy. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, October 30th, 2011. This is Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, everybody.
And I am actually doing the show this week from my hotel room in Iași, Romania.
Iași. Okay.
Spelled I-A-S-I.
Look, how big is that town?
I heard someone say it's around 300,000 people.
Okay.
It's apparently the second largest city in Romania, after Bucharest.
Okay.
I've been here for the last few days. Local time, I arrived Tuesday evening, and it's now local time. It's like 7 in the morning Sunday, and I'll be checking out of my hotel momentarily. Well, not momentarily, in a few hours. And
so how was the route for you to fly there? What was your connections? You went.
So on the way there, I flew Seattle to Paris, Paris to Bucharest, Bucharest to Iași.
So there is a Seattle-Paris nonstop?
Yes.
Damn, it's a long flight.
It was a long flight. Yep. I mean, it was, overnight, and they expect you to try to sleep. And, I got excited at first because, compared to the last few domestic flights I've been on, the seats, actually reclined a little bit. And I'm like, ooh, very exciting. The seat, I mean, not a lot. I was in coach,
yeah,
not
but they,
business.
Yeah, they have an additional pitch, yeah.
But I got really excited about it until, the guy behind me started kneeing me to, put my seat back up. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
That's a jerk. Oh, you wound up with a friggin' jerk behind you. I mean, that's a friggin' jerk off.
Yeah, after a little while, he actually had the seat next to him empty, so he, lay down across two seats, and then I reclined anyway. But,
okay.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I didn't actually, sleep a significant portion of the way. I was thinking, when I got ready to go to the airport, I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to get on the plane and I'll, sleep the whole time. And no.
Well, did you fly on a, what kind of plane was it? 747, A340, you mean?
Some kind of Airbus.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
I'll figure it out.
I don't know.
But I guess, it's tough to sleep on those if you're not used to doing it. I remember that. When I first started just traveling like that, at first it was tough to get to sleep. Then it got to a point where I was just so used to it. There was a time that I'd freaking fall asleep before we took off, and I'd only wake up when the freaking plane touched down and landed.
Yeah, I slept a little bit.
It was the whole thing was a total blur. I wouldn't eat the meals, nothing, just sleep.
Yeah,
all the way there.
I slept little bits here and there, but not enough. But anyway. That was an interesting enough trip. The way from one thing that was sort of semi-traumatizing to me was the cab ride from the airport in Iași actually to my hotel because I think it's probably the first time in a very, very long time that I was in a car without a seatbelt.
Well, had you ridden in the backseat of a car in a cab in a long time?
Yeah, with seatbelts.
Oh, shit, I never put a seatbelt in the backseat of a car.
Putting on a seatbelt is so, like, ingrained in me. Since, like, I was a small child, it's, like, part of the same motion of getting in a car.
I put on a seatbelt all the time, but I gotta admit that when I'm riding in the backseat of a car, on cabs and stuff, I never.
See, I always do, even on a cab. But this one did not have a functioning seatbelt. You know, it had a seatbelt, but it wasn't. There was no place to latch it to.
Okay.
So anyway, I was like, but I mean, I wasn't like traumatized. But I was like, oh my god, I'm riding in a car without a seatbelt. and anyway, but. But no, it was an interesting trip over. Romania is interesting. This is common in many parts of the world right now. But one of the most dramatic things is all the contrast between old and new and whatever. Like construction is everywhere in this town. Like they're building new things all over the place. Like. And it seems like the economy is booming. I asked some of the people I work with who live here, and they're like, well, it looks like it's booming here, but it's actually very localized in the cities. And so, like, if you look at overall, there's still a lot of people that aren't doing very well. New buildings popping up everywhere right next to the old buildings from the communist era that are... not really that old in the great scheme of things, but look like they're falling apart, you know? And then all of those next to the much older things that are centuries old. That, you know.
Well, I can see from, you know, yeah, I mean, but it's, I mean, I guess it, you know, it's one of the contrasts of like Europe. I mean, it's, you know, almost 2 months now. I mean, we got in Barcelona. I mean, there were places that, I mean, there were some of the walls that they still had preserved were from like when the, I mean, the city was founded during the Roman Empire. I mean, there were places like, you know, still remains of the original walls from, and the aqueduct that the Romans had built originally 2,000 years ago from the city, you know,
mm-hmm.
like across from places that were very modern at the same time.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So that's the kind of contracts that you get that you certainly don't get. Over here, so
yeah, it was interesting to hear the discrepancies when saying, you know, hey, it looks like everything's booming, and he's like, it just looks like that. You get you get a distorted perspective by looking just in the city, it's an interesting place. I don't know that I'd want to move here, but very Western. I like the kids were all getting ready for Halloween, you know, like in the mall. In the mall, there was a little area where, like, you know, the kids would line up to get like little costumes and face paint and stuff. And then they'd go sit on it was like Santa Claus at Christmas in the U.S. where there's a guy you sit on and they'd take a picture, except it was for
uh-huh.
Halloween,
uh-huh.
you know, and, you know, so it's fun. One more quickie thing, I guess, from it. I did have one difficulty with my debit card. Like, so I actually, for the most part while I've been here, I've been using cash. But I went yesterday. I was doing some shopping to bring the presents home for the kids and stuff. And my debit card was denied. It was the first time I'd used my debit card here. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, okay. So, yeah,
I'm like, oh, crap. I paid for what I was getting in cash. But then, like, you know, then I went through the rigmarole with my bank. And my bank was like, there's nothing wrong with your card. I don't know why it's being turned down.
Sometimes with debit cards, I've found it's a little bit difficult because of the networks, and like it's kind of tough to actually use a debit card overseas, to be honest with you.
So in the end, after spending way too long on the phone, and especially like, you know, they were like, you know, we have to talk to you. Like, they wouldn't let my wife take care of it, And I didn't have, like, the international roaming crap turned on. So I'm, like, paying $4 a minute or whatever to be on the phone with these jokers. But anyway, they, you know, they're like, eventually what they said, and I don't believe this was actually true for a second, but just this is what my bank ended up saying. It's not a problem with us. It's a problem with MasterCard. They've shut down the entire country of Romania.
That's probably not true.
Exactly.
But I will say that.
So let me just complete that. After they said that, and then they said, and there's nothing we can do about it, and there's nothing MasterCard can do about it. Sorry. Do you have a Visa, maybe? then they actually put the note in my account that said, yes, I actually am in Romania, and it instantly started working. Because it was, you know, it as an anti-fraud measure, you know, and this is what I suspected the instant it happened, was that, you know,
you never travel, so it just freaking went and rejected it the first time you went to
Houston. Because it's like, he's not in Romania, what the hell, he's never used his card outside of Seattle, or Ohio, or wherever I've been inside the States. And so I figured that's what it was, and... But the lady on the other end was like, no, we blah, 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 blah. Swearing up and down, that wasn't it. But as soon as she put the notation in my file that I was actually in Romania, oh, the card started working. Well, thank you. So after, you know, however long on the phone with them.
Your flight was, it was an, oh my God, they used an A330 for that flight? Ugh. Okay. Oh my God, 10 hours and 25 minutes on an A330 doesn't sound like really a lot of fun. Okay.
So my way home, by the way, is from here to Bucharest. I arrive at Bucharest at 9 p.m. and leave Bucharest at 6 a.m. So just long enough that, like, it was sort of like, at first I was like, it's less than 8 hours, I'll just hang out at the airport. But then I saw the Bucharest airport on the way in, and now I have
a
hotel.
You decided to get a hotel.
Yeah, okay. So I'll have a hotel, and then on the way back, instead of Paris, I'm going through Amsterdam.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and it was Air France on the way in, KLM on the way back.
So let me ask you this. I mean, just you said you were using debit cards and cash. I mean, do you have a corporate card?
No.
Okay.
No.
So how did you pay for the hotel?
Well, I'll find out in a few hours. No. Everything is like I pay and then get reimbursed.
Yeah. But you're using like what, your debit card?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. You out of your freaking mind. Okay.
Why?
Okay. All right. So anyway, I'm glad that your trip went very well. You haven't been kidnapped, killed, or anything of the sort.
Not yet. Not yet. I've got another 24 hours or so to do that.
You've got another shot at it, though. There you go. Okay. You're happily flying the A330, which is that plane that went in like a couple of... Of course, then flew... Well, you didn't get killed. Remember, Air France... was the guys that went like took that A330 from Rio de Janeiro to Paris and basically stalled and crashed.
Tell me all the great stories about it. You know, in the middle of the night last night, like I'm still all screwed up on time zones. So in the middle of the night last night, I woke up and it's like, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever local time here. And I'm like, I don't want to be awake. I want to still be asleep. But I flipped on the TV and I'm flipping channels.
Air disasters on TV.
Air disaster movie.
Yes!
It was a made-for-TV movie called Mayday from, like, 2005 or something.
Oh, yeah, it's an awful movie, my lord. Yeah, I mean, I tried to watch part of it. It's not very good.
So the plot of... And I only watched, like, the last half of it or whatever, but of course I watched the last half of it. The Air Force accidentally shoots a missile into a commercial airliner. Almost everybody on board is killed. Or in a coma because of, like, sudden decompression.
Right,
and, like,
right.
Two stewardesses and, like, some guy who flew small planes on the weekends have to, like, land this plane.
There you go.
While meanwhile, the Air Force and the owners of the plane are trying to cover up what happened by giving them false instructions to try to crash the plane.
Well, you know, hey, but you know, that's not bad. I mean, you know, look, my wife keeps getting pissed off at me because I keep watching, like, I don't know, I think it's like on History, not on the Smithsonian, they have the show on, like, air disasters all the time, and then I keep watching that damn show all the time, and I'm like, and she's like, what are you, crazy? I mean, why are you watching this? I'm like, you know, it's like, but I like to watch it. I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, that's just what I need right before I get up and go to the airport. And, you know, my first flight is like some, like, little local propeller plane from here to Bucharest. And then I've got a couple, you know, larger international flights. And, yes, exactly what I need to do right before that is load up on air disaster movies.
Well, I will tell you this. It's not as bad. I do believe that once I did travel...
and you watched one on the plane.
I have a book that is a hardcover book called Air Disasters. I think I was reading that on a trip. I think people thought I was out of my mind.
Hey, well, at least they didn't pull you off the plane and arrest you for it.
Right. I think
as you're sitting there, as you're sitting there in the seat with your big How to Make Airplanes Crash book.
Well, this is about accidents, you know, not intentional takedowns.
Okay. Anyway, enough of this stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit about the Eurozone attempted rescue, the crackdowns on the Occupy movement, and a little bit about Netflix's latest exciting moves. And along with that, there's another company that backtracked a little bit on its stuff this week too, so maybe we'll mention them. Yeah. So let's take a break. We will be back after this exciting message. Always love it when Yvonne sings. Anyway, we are back. So Yvonne, obviously I've been sitting here in Europe and I've been watching occasionally some of the coverage. The television here has a couple like European channels as well as CNN. Basically what I got is like they decided to put up a big fund to help, you know, the Greece situation. Let me stop. Like Greece, the debt holders agreed to like take a haircut by like half, and then there's a whole bunch of money being put up, and a lot of people seem to get really happy. Markets went up, but at the same time, I hear lots of people saying, this doesn't address any of the underlying issues.
Yeah, and I think that's the crux of it. I mean, you know, because let's face it. I mean, just because, okay, so say the Greeks take a 50% haircut under debt, right? What's gonna stop them from like going and gorging on debt again? I mean, other than the fact that a lot of people just don't want to loan them any more money. I mean, that's about it. And you know, I think that the problem is just one where we're just going to throw money at the problem, and that it really fixes structural problems that caused this in the first place. I think that that's the thing. And, you know, the problem is, I don't know if it's enough money, to be honest with you, to a certain extent. Because the one thing is that one of the things they kept talking about is how much capital that a lot of this debt, for some reason, is held by banks, and they're not sure whether the banks are going to have enough capital to be able to be able to absorb those losses. I think that's the problem, and what kind of like redundant losses that could cause. So I don't know. I mean, the good news is they did something. The bad news is
they did something. Yes,
right. It's kind of like that. You know. So people are still very worried about it. You know, and remember, this is just Greece. I mean, Portugal is supposedly also in the same dire straits. Ireland is not in very good shape. You know, a lot of people are worrying about the Italians, but the Italians are not in that bad a shape, I mean, compared to the other ones. Spain is certainly in a recession, but, I mean, they're not also in the same boat, but the bottom line is that you've got multiple countries with a lot of money lying out there, and people are still not feeling comfortable about this whole thing. Maybe time will tell whether this does work out or not. I mean, time will tell, definitely. But, I mean, right now, people are just still a little bit, like, nervous about the whole thing, I think.
Well, do you think there's really any long-term fix other than, you know, actually tying the budget policies of the various countries in the Eurozone together?
There's only two real options, okay? Either broader political and economic fusion, or basically kicking out if you could, or basically breaking up the euro. I mean, that's one of the things that this is a half step towards more integration than less. My question is, I'm just wondering how many people really want to have all this integration, to be honest with you. Especially the Germans, who a lot of them feel like they're having to pay for everybody else's fuck-ups.
Well, and that's one of the things. I mean, like, if you're really going to have, you know, a unified whatever, hey, that's part of the deal. I mean, like, you know, the fact that, like, I mean, if you try to think of it as, like, you know, the U.S. states, you know,
right.
they have one currency. If Mississippi goes and, like, screws things up royally, well, guess what? California and New York are on the hook.
Well, think about it. I mean, let's face it. Illinois is almost bankrupt, for example. And if they go, I mean, we're going to be, you know, it's our currency. I mean, a lot of people over here on the hook for that, for the money. You know, Harrisburg, for example, it's a city. Just filed for bankruptcy. You know, you've got a lot of stuff like that going on around municipalities, states, cities that are in difficult financial situations. So, I mean, it's a very realistic thing, and we've had to deal with it, but I guess the one but even in the U.S., people still, here are things that happen sometimes, for example. You know, one of the reasons why people keep, I've said that actually I think that Greece should have never been in the Euros because right now they could have helped the situation.
Sarkozy said that this week too. He's like, look, it was a mistake.
Yeah, because they could have gotten the way out of the problem the same way that they normally did, which was by devaluing the currency. And guess what? They can't. They just can't do it anymore.
Well, all of Europe could decide to devalue the euro.
But it's very difficult to do it when all of Europe is together on the boat. It's the same reason. It's the same way. It's very difficult, say, to help California or to help one state. It's very difficult to like devalue the whole dollar. You understand
well,
what
right.
I'm saying?
But the point is, like, if you were treating it as a truly unified entity, then you wouldn't be like, oh, well, Greece's debt is over what it should be. You'd be looking at the net debt of the whole Eurozone. And
right.
If that was bad, then you'd do what you needed to with the currency.
No, agreed. But at the same time, the one thing that happens when you have one unified currency like that, and you've got, like, it makes it difficult. Like, certain areas may need different monetary policy, and you can't do it. Okay? I mean, everybody is on the same currency or is on the same boat. So it's not like, you know, you could take a monetary policy and, like, you know, you could have a situation where, I mean, this has happened before, where the United States has been doing very well and interest rates are going up, but you got a couple of states that are in dire straits, and there, what happens is that those states suffer a lot,
yeah,
even more, because the whole country in general is doing well, so therefore you can't really lower rates to help that state. And that's kind of the situation that you're seeing there right now, where Greece would probably benefit from a very loose fiscal policy, and they can't do it because they're stuck in the euro.
Right.
That's the way it is. So
yeah, and sort of the counterpart to that is that essentially the other states in the union have to sort of make the commitment to, okay, that's going to happen every once in a while, and then when it does, we're going to help out.
That's pretty much it. You know, so
That's where there's still a lot of reluctance to do that on the part of, you know, the big economies.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, because they signed up for this monetary union, but to a certain extent, but it's not even a full monetary union, and they didn't sign up for that much political union. So therefore, it's just, you know, you're kind of like in this half-baked state, and people are like, you know, reluctant to, like, to jump in all the way. So,
well, right, and you can sort of bail them out, but you can't make them be better. You know,
right.
Like,
that's exactly right.
Fundamentally, so, change what they're doing so it doesn't happen again in 6 months.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing, and that's the other problem. I mean, yeah. So we do this now. Then what? What if they fuck up? You know, what if they fuck it all up again? So
is this only kicking it down the road a little bit further?
I don't know if it's kicking it down the road. I mean, the 50% haircut's a pretty significant haircut. And I mean, I think that doing that step is certainly one step in not kicking this down the road, okay? The only thing is whether, you know, the fix will take. I mean, whether they just won't fuck it up again. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly – doing that haircut is certainly not kicking that down the road anymore. It's just basically finally accepting it is what it is. It's done. We have to bite the bullet. Let's get this going. Okay.
Do you see a continued negative drag because of this on the world economies?
For you know what? I don't know. I think that the negative drag that we've got right now I mean, there's a – you see, the problem is that economically, the negative drag that we've got is a combination of multiple things. You've got the Chinese purposely slowing down their economy, okay? You've got the U.S., which is still – the economy is not, you know, being able to shift into a higher gear because of the debt overhang we've got from the real estate crisis that nobody's still solved, okay? Even though, you know, they proposed another proposal this week to try to help that, but it still doesn't go far enough to try to do that. And that you've got some high commodity prices as well, like oil, for example, sapping people's purchasing power. So you got a combination of things all happening all at once that I don't know. I mean, it's just people have got to take some action. I mean, I think that this is a good first step in trying to help, but I just don't know with all the other factors happening at the same time whether – yeah, you're going to see a lot of, like, positive impact on the world economy. So,
okay, well, stay tuned. In the meantime, let's take another break, and we'll be back and talk about the continuing saga of the Occupy protests.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. So, Occupy. I gather while I've been gone, they tear gassed some folks in Oakland, and they rounded up some people in Denver, and they pushed some people out other places, and they're dumping snow on the ones in New York right now. So,
well, I mean, yeah, but I guess that, I don't know, what's your take? I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Here's my, and I talked a little bit about it with John last week. My fundamental take on this is to all the municipalities involved is, what the fuck are you thinking? You know, just leave them alone and they'll eventually go away. You know, and I realize they're causing a little bit of disruption. And, you know, there's probably, like, I know I saw some stuff about, you know, when we last spoke, we talked about the potential economic disruption around these things. And I know that I saw some reports, for instance, on the ones in Seattle that basically the merchants in the area around where the Occupy Seattle were seeing a significant negative effect, because people just didn't want to go there to go shopping because there's a big, you know, demonstration there, so they're going somewhere else. So there is that effect, but for the most part, you know, this is free speech. This is what one of the fundamental values of our country. You know, the people are going out there and they're doing signs, and whether you agree with them or not, like, the correct response is not to go break up the demonstration with violence and tear gas and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, the ones in Oakland, one of the tear gas canisters, I guess, hit some guy in the head, and he's, you know, it was in fairly serious condition, which I gather he's starting to come out of. But, you know, this is not like the only possible thing that can come out of police using force to clear these spaces is negative. There's no possible positive outcome from that. So just monitor the situation, make sure, you know, people aren't getting hurt, and leave them alone. I fundamentally, like, I don't understand what these municipalities are thinking when they start saying, okay, we're going to come in and arrest you all. And I guess Chicago arrested a bunch of people too. And because also they could just come back the next day. I don't know.
I think that for the most part, I agree with, I agree with you. I mean, unless they're being disruptive or something. I mean, you know, like down here in Miami, they're protesting. They camped out in front of the Miami-Dade County, the main building, the houses, like the mayor and most of the administrative offices and the board of county commissioners down in Miami-Dade County. And, you know, for the most part, there aren't a lot of, you know, commerce is not being affected by them. There's a big public space there where there are protests. They're in high visibility. I mean, so they are getting the visibility they want. They're not disrupting really a lot of people. So they haven't really touched them. They've let them just camp out, and it is what it is. You know, I mean, people, you know, they are visible, obviously. So it's not like, but yet at the same time, it's not disruptive to people. But, you know, but they are making their point. And, you know, and I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, you know, people should have totally the right to be able to do this. But, you know, like everything in life, you know, the rights of, you know, your rights end when the other person's rights begin, I guess. It's one of the things.
Yeah. And frankly, I think the Occupy movement could get most of their point across by having daily demonstrations and going home at night.
I totally agree.
I don't know. I just think it's like all of these municipalities overreacting, because I just don't see the pressing need that they have to get these people off the squares or wherever they are now.
You know, you got all the pressure washing that you have got to do in New York.
You got to clean the sidewalk. I mean, frankly, the protesters are probably keeping it cleaner than it generally was before.
Probably. Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know. And of course, we're still, like we talked a few weeks ago, I mean, it's still a movement who's all about sort of building awareness of their issues as opposed to proposing any solutions. But I think that they have somewhat, you know, succeeded in terms of getting those issues on the agenda of public discourse. I mean, you hear, you know, you hear more talk about the jobs related issues. I mean, we've been talking about it for months, but you know, it's being resurfaced towards the top of the agenda in terms of, oh, maybe someone might want to do something, you know, and
well, look, the stuff like, for example, the whole stuff about the top 1% of income earners, you know, it's been like bouncing around, and you know, the income inequality right now.
Right.
And I conducted a couple of job interviews this week. Okay. All right. And I talked to these people and I'm like, you know, you think about, I met this person, married person, the only breadwinner in the house, has a child, you know, an adult going to college. I don't recall if he had other children, but just say he had one. But he's still trying to pull together this entire family on $47,000 a year.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, you think about this, $37,000 a year, you know, two people having a car, a home, driving to work.
And that's pretty close to the median household income in the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. I mean, I can't see how it's easy. I mean, yeah. You know, I had this other person that was making currently about $35,000 a year trying to do, you know, I actually, this guy was single. I was like, thank God, I'm like, geez. But you know, I mean, this is a very common thing where people, you know, trying to do this. And you know what? The thing that a lot of Republicans ignore, totally ignore, is in the 50s, especially if you think about the period of 1940s and 50s, when, especially in the 50s, when the U.S. was extremely prosperous. We didn't have the protests of the 60s, etc., specifically in the 50s. But even the 60s, taxes were a lot higher.
Yep.
Middle-income families were making a lot more. And the economy was growing a lot faster than it is right now. And, you know, all this bullshit that they talk about, people not starting companies and like undermining growth and blah blah blah. What a load of shit. The top marginal rate was like 80-90% back then, for God's sakes, and that still didn't stop people from doing it. However, what we did have, okay, was a much better income distribution. And
right.
I think that honestly,
I've seen a few charts that people have put together that look at economies in the U.S. and worldwide over long time frames, like 100 years plus, and there actually is a fairly strong correlation that in periods of lower discrepancy between the high and low ends of the income spectrum, overall growth was larger. You put a larger percentage of the available income and wealth into the middle classes, and it operates as an engine of growth, more so than when it's isolated.
They will spend the money. If you're making $1 million, you're making $2 million. Okay, all right. If you're covering your basic needs with the first $400,000, what the fuck do you do with the rest of the money? Especially like right now, what's happening? You know what they're doing?
People are hoarding it.
They're keeping it in cash.
Yeah.
They're not even investing it in anything. It's sitting in cash.
And even when they are investing it, a lot of the difficulty is non-productive investments where, you know, it's one thing to invest in a new business venture that's going to hire people and do things. It's another thing to invest in a financial instrument that invests in other financial instruments that hedges against some other financial instrument.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just, you know, we're just fucking washing money, but left and right. I mean, it's just not doing anything.
Right.
You know, when I hear all these people making money on high-frequency trading, for God's sakes, I mean, what the fuck does high-frequency trading do to really improve the economy? Nothing. It's just people playing freaking money like it's freaking Las Vegas.
Yeah, and meanwhile, it makes the underlying stock go out of whack with any sort of notion of fundamentals.
Right. So, anyway. All right.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, fun stuff. Okay.
So, I mean, I think we sort of agree that, like, in a lot of the things that the Occupy people are talking about, they've got a point.
They do. They do.
I don't know what the right thing to do about it is, but they've got a point. And I'm not sure that the way they're demonstrating is the right way, but they're certainly gaining attention to their issue. And just to wrap it up, and I think the municipalities who are going after these people are out of their frickin' minds, because it can only make things worse.
I agree.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about Netflix and HP and fun corporate reversals. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
So, Netflix, we talked a few weeks ago about how incredibly stupid they were with how they were flushing their customers down the toilet and doing everything they possibly could to alienate their best, most enthusiastic customers. And so how did that work out for them?
How did that work out? Well, their profits soared, okay, during this quarter. However, they lost close to 1 million subscribers in the quarter. Okay, I mean, a staggering amount, and you know, there seems to be, you know, indications that they're probably going to lose quite a few million more right now. So anecdotally, it just seems like right now, and the stock got crushed. I mean, when the numbers came out and how bad it was in terms of customer defections, I mean, the stock just got hammered. I remember when they announced the pricing change, I hadn't looked at it up close because I'm not a Netflix subscriber. But, you know, they're just so fucking out of their minds. I mean, usually, you know, I've never seen such a colossal combination blunder in the hit, I mean, ever. I mean, I'm trying to remember when, and this is just the biggest one I could recall. Because, you know, cable companies, what do they do? What do they do over the years?
They raise their price a little bit every year.
Exactly.
Let's double it.
Exactly. Oh, we had to raise the prices last few years. Fuck, let's raise it 60%. First shot. I mean, what the hell's the matter with you? Okay? There's a thing called price sensitivity. I mean, if you would have raised the price the last couple of years, we're going to raise it 50 cents. We're going to raise it, you know, another 50 cents. You could have probably even raised it a buck. Okay? And you could have gone next year, probably ask for another buck. And maybe the next year you ask for another 50 cents or something. And you probably could have gotten away with that. But the way they did it was so stupid. I mean, I just never seen anything like it. So, yeah, so they got hammered. I mean, you know, subscribers are fleeing. I mean, it gets to a point, like, I think 10 bucks a month is, like, if you think about it, a certain tipping point. Because I guess if you go and, like, you go actively online and say you went to iTunes and you purchased a couple of rentals, that's like two movies, okay? Right? So it's like two. So, but some people sometimes don't pick up anything any month. So when you bump it up to $16, I mean, you're like almost like, well, you may not be, I mean, you may never be getting to that kind of money a month.
Right.
And I think that that's where they just completely fucked up.
Well, it's the number of things you watch, the number of things that you both through the mail and through the streaming. You know, yeah, you're comparing what would I be paying a la carte for this versus the monthly fee,
right?
And you're also looking at sort of the convenience of it and everything. And yeah, first there was the big rebellion on the price, and then of course they had that whole Quickster thing,
right?
And that's what they've backed off on now. They were going to split the DVD mail business from the streaming business, make it two completely separate websites that didn't talk to each other. And then, so I guess, you know, after all this, the CEO is like, oh, we've heard from people that they didn't like this idea. So we're not going to do it.
Right.
You know, and Yeah. I will say we have not canceled our Netflix account.
Okay. How many movies do you normally watch on Netflix a month?
Not enough to be worth it.
Not enough to be worth it.
Huh? Well, let's put it. Well, see, here's the thing. I really only have, like, I don't do the streaming part of it, but my family does. Okay. So I don't have a good sense of how much they watch on streaming Netflix. I know with the physical discs, we've got a 4-disc plan, and we've got it separated into 4 different queues, so that, you know, there's I have a queue, my daughter has a queue, et cetera, that are independent of each other. And the physical discs, we don't turn over very frequently at all. Like, for a while, we were watching, you know, one movie together as a family every week. We haven't done that in, like, forever because we've been too busy. So, like,
okay.
You know, so these discs, you know, once we get one of these discs, they stay out for months before they get returned.
So, basically, you are, I mean, if you went
on, I'm a dream customer for Netflix because we pay a shitload more than we actually use.
And I guess, you know, and they made it that he was, like, even, you know, more lopsided. And a lot of people just realized it just wasn't worth it.
Yeah, and I told you the other time, like, this is the kind of thing that makes you think about it. Like, I you know,
you probably wouldn't have thought about it if that price a lot of people probably would have never even given it one thought if the massive price increase wouldn't have come through.
Right.
So all they managed to do is, like, fucking lose a whole bunch of customers because basically they're idiots.
Yeah. And make themselves look completely incompetent, which, yep, loses the confidence of investors as well, and anybody that they were looking to make business deals with. I mean, because one of their big things was they were trying to get all kinds of leverage on the content providers.
Right. They just lost a lot of fucking leverage with the content providers.
Yeah.
Because
the content providers don't really want to make their content available in a, you know, single monthly fee, get as much as you want kind of format. They want pay-per-view.
Yes, they do. But, I mean, I have an Apple TV. When I need to watch a couple of movies, I go in there and I pull them up, done. And you know what? I'm happy with that. I haven't seen the need for something else. Not a subscription thing or not a whatever. I mean, would I like the rentals to be longer? Yes, but that's about it. But honestly, usually we're going to grab a rental. We're grabbing it because we're going to watch it, like, right now.
Mm.
Okay? All right? We're going to watch it right now. And we decided we want to sit down and we want to watch TV. We want to watch it right now. And boom, that's it. That's all we do.
Right.
So.
And people have different patterns with that kind of thing. Like, you know, I would never watch anything if I waited until I was sitting down and I want to watch something right now. You know, I have a queue of things, and then when it's, like, time to watch something, I watch what's next on the queue. But, you know, different people do that different ways. But I like the notion of not having to think about how much it costs every time I want to get something, but instead knowing that I have a certain library of things that I've already paid for. And whenever I want to watch anything from it, I just watch it.
No, I hear you, and there's a lot of people that, you know, have that way or another, but, you know.
And again, the actual economics depends on how much you watch and what you watch.
Exactly.
And, you know, which service has which things available, and that's another one of the really freaking annoying things about the current state of, you know, these kinds of services is that, you know, each of the different services, be it streaming or download or purchase or whatever, has a different set of content based on their own deals, you know, whereas you really want to have something where you can just be fairly confident that whichever is your preferred mode of getting things, everything's there. Like, and really, like, music has gotten to that point. Like, yes, there's still a few holdouts that aren't, like, on iTunes or on Amazon MP3 or whatever, but for the most part, if you think of a piece of music you want to buy, you can go to either of those places and they've got it.
Hey,
that's not true of video content yet.
just before I forget, as we're almost wrapping up, are you sure your watch is on the right time over there? I'm just looking at this thing. Says, a reminder, European summertime ends just like a few hours ago in Europe. Clocks will be set backwards in 1 hour.
I'll double check. I think that I saw that was British Standard Time, but I thought the rest of Europe had another couple weeks.
That's not what it says here on this thing.
Okay, well, I'll figure it out. Whatever.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the airport early enough that, like, it's not going to matter.
All right, good.
Yeah, because I got this thing going where, like, I have to check out of the hotel by noon. My my flight's not to like, 7-something.
Oh, you'll be fine.
So, and I'm not going to go straight to the airport either, though, because, like, it's one of these small airports. There's not even, like, a real place to sit, you know? So, I'll probably...
Why don't you ask for a late checkout?
I could ask for a late checkout, but I figure, like, I'll get the,
They usually don't charge.
Yeah.
You'll probably get a few extra hours.
I mean, I'll get a few extra hours, but either way, like, or they'll, like, watch my bag downstairs while I go to the mall across the street or whatever.
Yeah,
you know? Or,
exactly.
Or I'll sit in the hotel, the hotel bar for a couple hours, whatever, you know.
Anyway,
so I did want to mention, before we wrap it up, HP did a flip-flop, too.
Oh, and yeah,
I know
HP
your favorite company
went and said, we were kidding, we're going to keep the PC business. We really crunched the numbers and figured out it didn't make any sense.
And they're
still 3D debt. I'm like, so wait a minute. So you didn't do that before, right? I mean, so you just fucking signed off on something that you fucking didn't think about that in the first place.
Well, that's why they fired the CEO, right?
I guess so. I mean, it just
I mean, because I figured, you know, they came out with a whole bunch of these announcements about ending this, ending that, and then like 2 days later, the CEO is gone. You got to figure they're just going to reverse every single decision that came out in that announcement the last week he was there.
They reversed that. I know that. I think that one thing that happened was that he was spending $10 billion to buy this stupid company, Autonomy, but the problem is that there was no legal way to fucking, like, undo the contract.
Right.
It's basically what I saw. So they're going to massively overpay for
it. But will they bring back WebOS, too?
Well, you know what? That's
supposedly
something
they're
that's
still thinking
a little bit
about
on the unclear. I'll tell you this. There was something about that. That was not really cleared up.
Yeah, like what I heard was they're still thinking about it. They are analyzing
thinking
that
about
issue.
It because, you know, yeah. So that's still a little bit in the air. That's not, you know, as far as I've heard from everybody that's actually bought them and got the other upgrades, they really like their touchpads.
Right.
So, which makes it a very bad shame that they decided to kill it because, you know, yeah.
Well,
I mean, it was actually a pretty nice product.
Well, because not enough people were buying it, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it was V1 of something that actually showed some potential and was actually taking a different approach. And, you know, and fundamentally, I think, like, you know, I've said this before, the fact that they have their own OS on that, as opposed to being reliant on somebody else, whether it be Android or Microsoft or whatever, you know, gives them...
A big edge
that they could do something with.
Not just for
their mobile, but for, you know, traditional laptops and desktops too.
Well, think about the situation where Nokia is right now. Okay, with having to now go into Windows 7 phones, and a situation which you actually highlighted in an email to me, describing the state of people who use Android devices and the fact that most of them it's so balkanized, and so many of them are not able to enjoy the latest version of the Android operating system, and how balkanized the ecosystem is and difficult to manage. They really had an opportunity to do something different, and I mean, right now they still have a window for it. To be honest with you, if they decide to change course, but as of right now, they've certainly, like, you know, let that opportunity go to waste. So,
So just for reference, the actual URL is really long, so I won't read it all, but what was being referred to there was at theunderstatement.com, a post made on October 26th called Android Orphans Visualizing a Sad History of Support. Basically, this guy took all of the major Android phones released in the last few years and tracked, you know, what version they were released with and when they got updates and basically how many versions behind they were from the actual current version of Android released by Google. And it looked pretty pitiful.
It was very bad. I mean, it showed that basically 95% of the phones bought in the last 3 years either are not on the current version or for the most part cannot be on the current version. How basically just the manufacturers just basically abandoned. So, you know, they rolled it out, and it just seems that they're not rolling out any updates because I guess they want you to buy a new phone.
Right.
And the way to make you buy the new phone is basically making you miserable with your current phone.
Right. And one of the things that was called out by this is, of course, the contrast to Apple, who tries to make you want the new phone by making you insanely happy with your current phone.
By continuously updating it on a regular basis.
Right. And then and then at some point you get features on the new phone that just aren't available on the old one because of hardware.
Yeah, because the processor, it's an older hardware and you can't get that. Oh, by the way, I did finally order my 4S.
How long is the delay?
Actually, they told me I should get it by Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay, so next week we're going to get a report on Siri from you, huh?
Yep. Yeah, we'll have a chat. We'll try to have a chat with her.
Okay, very good. So with that, let's wrap up the show. I'll start getting my stuff together. I don't know if I'll get this show out before I leave or not, but I'll start getting my stuff together and ready to go to the airport for my like 36-hour return trip to Seattle.
Oh God. Heaven forbid. Okay. Well, good luck on your trip. Okay. All right.
Yep. So thanks everybody for listening once again. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, whatever. Tell your friends to listen and tune in again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.